Okay, everybody, as the summer gets, or our half of the summer gets closer to drawing to a close, it's one of the great zechuyos of the summer each year when Rav Bamberger Shlita agrees to come and share Torah with us. It always gives such great chizuk. I just want to make a plug. I am an avid listener of Rabbi Bamberger Shirim. I saw one of the questions on the Q&A with me and Rabbi Razin that wasn't asked last night. Is what do you guys? What do you listen to in your spare time or in your commute? And Rabbi Bamberger's shmuzin always just they hit home. He's so down to earth, and he has good Torah to back up all of his yisodos in Hashkafa and his yisodos in Musar. So one of the great privileges of my life is, I mentioned last year that my 3 years in Lander College, I got to sit next to Rabbi Bamberger every morning for a few hours every single morning, so we got to schmooze a lot in learning and about other things. And like whenever I needed, you know, something to frame what was going on in the world or how to relate to Balabatim in certain inyanim, just has this incredible gift in being able to do so in an impactful way. So I always try to get Rav Bamberger to come and to speak to the Masmidim, and again, it's part of this idea of giving you exposure to significant Talmidei Chachamim that you can gain a great deal from. So I just want to thank him for making the shlep, and his son Shlomo Zalman for also making the shlep together with him and sharing Torah with us this evening.
Okay, B'shus the Merida Asra Shlita, it's a very big kavod for me to be here in Camp Keli and to participate in this Kailel, in this Masmidim program, and my Yedid Nefesh is an inspiration to me and to so many others, and if he calls me and asks me to come up, then besides for wanting to be here for other reasons, but just for the fact that he took the time to ask me to come is reason enough to come and to make the trip. And he needs no introduction, he needs no shevach. Everybody that's in this space medrash knows his godless and his chachma and his pikchus and his bekiyas and his popularity in the whole Olam HaTorah on so many levels, and it's a great schus to be here, and I thank him, and I thank all of you for being here this evening. One of the great parts of Camp Keli, besides for the crown jewel, which is this Masmidim program, is that there is a chiddush in Camp Keli, and that is that they were able to take a regular camp and they were able to have a concept called inclusion, that they were able to take regular quote-unquote children and young adults and developmentally disabled ones and put them together in a bunk and on the playing fields and in the dining room and be able to establish kesharim with one another, which is it's a chesed beyond. Because if we could go into the minds and the hearts of people that are not as fortunate as us and then and yearn to be a regular camper, a regular bacher, and not have that ability, and yet somehow this magical place was formed in order to give them that ability, that's a chesed that's beyond our imagination. And I think that this week's parsha really is a makar for this entire experience of this camp, of this great makam. There's a pasuk in this week's parsha, in Parsha's Pinchas, that says in Perek Chavav Psukim Mem Aleph to Mem Beis, Eile B'nei Don L'mishpachaisam, these are the children of Don, speaking about the amount of descendants that came from everyone in the Shvatim. Arba'a v'shishim elef arba meis, 46,400 from B'nei Don. Eile B'nei Don l'mishpachaisam, these are the children of Don l'shucham. Shucham. Shucham was the son of Don. It's fascinating that the Torah says Eile B'nei Don. He only had one son. His name was Shucham. And another way of calling Shucham was Chushim. Chushim ben Dan was, of course, the famous individual that appears in the Gemara in Saita, who, when Yaakov Avinu was being taken to Maros Machpelah for his Kavod Acharon, for his Gvura, so Esav all of a sudden appears on the scene and makes a macha, he protests, he says, no. He says, why does Yaakov get to be buried in this burial plot? It's mine. And they say, well, you know, you sold Yaakov the Bechair. He says, yeah, maybe I sold him the Bechair, the Chelek HaBechair, I sold him the Chelek HaPshuta, the regular Chelek, I'm still a son of Yitzchak. I should be in Tai. Who says that he should get it? I should get it. So they say, well, there's a contract somewhere in Mitzrayim that says just that, that it's Yaakov's burial plot. So he says, all right, so, you know, Mitzim Echavel, or I bring the shtar. So the Gemara says that who are we going to send? They sent Naphtali. Naphtali was Klila Ka'ila. As the Pasuk says, Naphtali, Ayala, Shlucha. Naphtali was very, very fast. He was able to make it all the way back to Mitzrayim very quickly to get that shtar, to retrieve the shtar in time to bury Yaakov Avinu. And while this whole thing was going on, Chushim, the son of Dan, who was deaf, he was hard of hearing, he was physically challenged, he takes a baseball bat, a club, and he bangs the head of Esav, and the head of Esav goes flying, it goes rolling onto the lap of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu smiles, the Gemara says. Of course, the head of Esav ends up being buried in the Maros Machpelah, according to some Medrashim, and that was it. And that was it. But Chushim ben Dan emerges as a hero in that story. He was the one that expedited the kvura of Yaakov Avinu. Reb Chaim Shmuel Lebetz parenthetically has a famous shmuz about this, that of all of the sons in Enoch Lach of Yaakov Avinu, the only one to step to the plate with a baseball bat was Chushim, because since he was deaf, ironically, that worked in his favor, because everybody that's not deaf, everybody that's sort of listening to this whole Maso Matan between the brothers and between Esav, and they're looking at it from a Chayshim Mishpatik standpoint, Chushim doesn't know from any Chachmas. He just sees that his grandfather is lying there at the Bizayin, and this can't be, and he was the one that went and did the Maisa of killing Esav and allowing Yaakov Avinu to be buried. Interesting, just parenthetically also, that from the Gemara it's mashma that Naphtali never actually came back with the shtar. This whole thing happened, Naphtali was presumably already on the road to back to Mitzrayim to fetch the shtar, and then in the meantime Chushim killed him and they didn't need the shtar. But it seems funny, the Pasuk says, Naphtali ayala shlucha neisein imrei shefer, the Gemara darshins al tikri imrei shefer ala imrei sefer, that he was the one that was supposed to bring back the shtar, but Hanaisin Imre Shefer, the Pasuk is mashma that he actually gave the Imre Shefer, he gave the Sefer. But the Gemara, the Bavli doesn't sound like that, but if you look, there's a Targum Yenison that actually says that that he did come back. That Naphtali returned with the shtar, showed it to Esav, and then Chushim ben Dan killed Esav. But the story was complete, Naphtali was actually able to complete his mission and bring back the actual shtar. If you look in the Chafetz Chaim al HaTorah, in this week's Parsha, so he says something unbelievable. He says that this Chushim ben Dan was the only son of Dan. He only had one child. And this child was hard of hearing. This child had a physical challenge. And probably everybody wrote him off. You can imagine, you know, he wasn't able to hear. Dan Nebuch had one son, the one son that he had, hard of hearing, and from this one son, says the Chafetz Chaim, came 46,400 people. Shevet Binyamin, if you contrast that, Binyamin, who had 10 sons, he had much less than that. He had very, very few actual descendants coming from Binyamin, even though he had 10 sons, 10 very strong, mighty sons. We know all their names was Al-Shem Yosef, and many of them didn't make it, and those that did make it, they weren't able to produce nearly the amount of offspring that this one person, this Chushim ben Dan, was able to produce. Says the Chafetz Chaim, that you see from here a tremendous lesson, that sometimes in life you see people that have disabilities, people that have challenges, people that everybody voted least likely to succeed, and nothing is going to be with them, and Nebuch, and they, you know, you feel bad. Never count out anybody, says the Chafetz Chaim, because every single person, every Yid has so much potential, and that the Torah brings us out through Chushim Ben Dan. Chushim Ben Dan, besides for being the hero that enabled Yaakovin to be buried and to get his covered Achrayim, but he also was able to produce so many thousands of people from him. An amazing thing. It's not just people that have developmental disabilities that this is true for. There's so many people in life that do not have developmental disabilities, but they're not popular. They have different issues, and we know them, and we feel bad for them, but we don't always include them. We're not always so good. Maybe sometimes we're better doing the Kaylee model than the regular model. If sometimes there's a guy in our shir, or a guy in our room, or a guy in our chabura, and he's not so popular, and he's not so cool, and he's not so brilliant. So very often we sort of tend to stay away from him. We're not going to bring our meal over in the cafeteria and eat right next to him. You know, let other people do it or whatever. I have my chevra, and that's not who I'm going to hang out with. What we have to learn from what we've said already this evening is that it's our obligation to include everybody. You can't count anybody out, and you should know that it's precisely those people that you think are least likely to succeed, and this is something that Rav Pam used to say, the people in life that you find were most least likely to succeed oftentimes are the most successful. And I see this in my own life. When I was in elementary school, I had a big class, I went to Hebrew Academy of Long Beach, and there were, I think I had 25, 26 boys in the class. And there were some really cool guys in my class. And they were very good in basketball, and they were very sharp, and they were very good looking, and most of them didn't really amount to too much. The ones that I follow, you know, in terms of what happened to them in the course of their life. And very often it was the guys that were like not so cool, not even so smart, and they had issues, but somehow they were able to have a tremendous amount of bracha in their life. Either they became tremendous talmidei chachamim, or they became very wealthy businessmen and established beautiful mishpachas, and they're leaders in their community. I don't know why that is. I'm not here to explain that. That's just the reality. Chazal say, Hizaru mibnei aniyim shemehem teitzei Torah, that from bnei aniyim, sometimes they're hungrier than everybody else. Bnei ashirim, they already rest on their laurels, but people that have issues and they have struggles, they're determined, they're committed sometimes to really ramp up their game, to ratchet it up, and to make themselves into people that no one ever imagined that they would be. I'll tell you a story that I regret that I didn't bring my prop with me. I normally, when I say this, but I thought about it just in the car, I guess, that years ago, in the early years of Lander, must be going back around 18, 19 years ago. So I had a Talmud that came. He was a very nice boy. He was a Baal Tshuva. And when he came to yeshiva, he didn't know which side of the Gemara was Rashi and which side of the Gemara was Taisus. That's how elementary his knowledge of learning was. But he was a wonderful boy, and he came to everything. If I gave a chabura after davening, he was there. And if I gave a daf yomi, he was there. And if there was a shir klal, he was there. And a vad, he was there. And a shmuz, he was a Shabbos, yantavi. He was always there, and he was always sitting front row center, and he was lapping up knowledge. He couldn't get enough knowledge. He just wanted to grow. And he was an amazing, amazing young man. And then he got married, Canada. I flew up to the chasna, beautiful chasna. And then he went off to Eretz Yisrael, and then I didn't hear from him for quite a while, for many years. He joined a kollel in Yerushalayim somewhere, and that's really the last I heard of him. And then, like a few years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, I get a package in the mail, and it has his name on it, but now it's not his old name, it's a new name, his first name, from Yerushalayim, and there's a sefer in it. And I said, well, it's so nice. I opened it up, and there was a nice chashuv sefer on Issa v'Heter, and has beautiful haskamas, and I thought, so nice, he sent me a sefer, such a beautiful gift, that's such a sweet gesture, you know, and so he inscribed it, and then I looked in the Shaar Blat, and I see that he was the author of the sefer, and it has haskamas from the Gedalei Eretz Yisrael, the Gedalei Yerushalayim. They were speaking about Harav HaGain. It's a guy that within like maybe 10 years, not more than 10, 11 years, he went from somebody that didn't know the difference between Rashi and Taisus, to somebody that's getting haskamas from the Ga'ina Yerushalayim, and he's putting out a sefer this thick. And I like bringing it just to show people, you think I'm making it up. Never, ever count out anybody. Because it's dafka the people that are the most challenged, and the people that are least likely to succeed in our minds, that they suddenly, vaksais, they grow into these tremendous people. And it's frightening because you see like how off you were about them, how you misjudged them. And it's so important, and this is maybe the greatest chinuch that Camp Haley could give us, is that you have to include everybody. You have to include everybody. When my girls go to camp, they go to sleepaway camp, whether they're this year, Baruch Hashem, they're already in counselor positions, so they don't have to pay. But all the years, you know, that's one of the Yiddish anachas, when they go from being a paid, you know, camper to being a counselor, it's like, wow, that's amazing. Nobody here knows. You'll see when you're my age, you'll get it. But when they were younger, I said, right before they went on the bus, they already knew my shmooze, and I said, listen, I'm not sending you to camp to be the most popular girl in camp. I'm not sending you up to camp to win color war. I'm not sending you up to camp to, I'm sending you up to camp, I'll das one thing and one thing only. That there will be a girl in your bunk who is going to be the least popular girl, and nobody's going to want to hang out with her. Nobody's going to want to have anything to do with her, and she's going to be crying herself to sleep every night. And I want you, it's your job, and this is why I'm sending you there, that you're going to make her popular. And if you do that, then the whole thing was kedai. And that's what a yid is supposed to do. And I told them then this year also, in their councils, there's going to be a camper in your bunk, going to be sad. That's who, don't focus on the cool girls. Focus on the girls that need you, that need that extra chizuk. Because that's what we're here for. That's what we're here to do. We're here to include everybody in the dance, in the circle of the Rabbi Nishlanum. I was thinking, Mashiach is also very much like this. Mashiach comes from the most sketchy of Yichus, the Benais Light, who had a relationship with their father, and from that came, of course, came Rus HaMayaviyah, came David HaMelech. The Gemara says in Yevamos, until you're clowning about whether or not he should be the king, make sure that his Yichus is good enough to be a member of Klal Yisrael. He was, the whole yichus was very amayni v'le amaynes, the whole question mark about his yichus. David HaMelech, and David HaMelech himself was, of all his brothers, the least likely to succeed. David HaMelech had very strong, handsome, robust brothers, and Shmuel came to anoint one of the sons of Yishai, and the last person that they thought would be the candidate for the job of being the Melech of Klal Yisrael was David. David was ruddy-haired, he was ruddy-cheeked, he had red hair, ruddy cheeks, he was Yifei-Naim, the Pasuk says. But even Shmuel doubted that he was the right man for the job, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu got very upset at him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what are you saying? He says, he sat down, he was mezalzel in David HaMelech, miyad katzav al HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'amar lai, kum mashcheyu, I want you to be meishachem, anoint him as the king, ki zehu, he is the king. And he says, "Kum begar amar lai, get up! What are you sitting down? Stand up! You're in the presence of a king. Kum milafada mashiachai oimed v'ata yoshev. My Mashiach is here, and you're sitting. He's standing. You're sitting. And when David HaMelech became king, he coined this beautiful pasuk in Hallel, Evan ma'asu habayim haysal reish pino, that the stone that the builders found disgusting." There is, there are stones that are good to be included in a building, and then there are stones that, all the building, throw that stone away. That's not a good stone. Eben Masa Abanim, that stone that everybody said was least likely to succeed, David HaMelech, the other brothers, they were the big knockers. David HaMelech, you know, he's Haisel Rashpina, that stone became the cornerstone. The cornerstone is the chashuva stone in the building. You know, if you see new buildings, a lot of times there's a cornerstone with a date. That's the spitz stone. Of all the stones, that's the stone you want to be if you're a stone. That's David HaMelech. Everybody discounted him. Everybody thought, never David. David, not happening. Haisel Rashpina, David HaMelech said about himself that I became the Rashpina. Mashiach comes from David. And Mashiach is also an ani v'reichav al achamari, is a poor man riding on a donkey, the last person you think. You expect Mashiach to be with a beautiful frack and a bekisha and a streimel and something. I don't know who you envision Mashiach. I think Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a famous vart. He said, how are we going to have Mashiach? You ever wonder, like, who's Mashiach going to be? If it's a chassid, then chassidim will be behind them, but the litvaks, the misnagdim, won't. You know, and if it's a misnagdim, then the chassidim are going to turn their backs on him. And if it's somebody of Sfaradi, Ashkenazim won't be into it. If it's Ashkenazi, Sfaradi, what's going to be? Who's Mashiach going to be? And Rabbi Yaakov says, like the Gemara in Megillah, that Esther, Vati Esther Noises Chain Beinei Kol Reyeha, that Esther found favor in the eyes of all that saw her. And the Gemara Darshan's Melamed Shekol Uma V'Uma Nidmas Alayku Umasay, every single person, Esther didn't say who she was from, which nationality she was from, so the Persians pointed at her and said, of course, she's Persian. And the Kastian looked at her and said, no, she's Kasti. And then the, from Yavon, they thought she was Greek. And every single Uma Chap, they looked at her and they thought she's from us. And if Yaakov Kamenetsky says that that's how Mashiach is going to be. Every single person is going to look at Mashiach and claim him as his own. There are certain, like, universal figures, like, I guess the closest person I could think of in history, recent history at least, is the Chasam Sofer. Chasam Sofer is somebody that everybody will acknowledge. Hasidim think he's a Chasid, and Yekas think he's a Yekka, and, you know, because he's in Hungary, it's like Central Europe, so everybody, like, acknowledges it. Everybody loves the Chasam Sofer. Everybody knows the Chasam Sofer is like he was the greatest Pesach, the Tshuvas of the Chasam Sofer are unbelievable, the Chidushim of the Chasam Sofer are unbelievable, and he wrote poetry, he appeals, he's everybody loves the Chasam Sofer. Somebody like that, somebody that everybody looks at and says, yeah, he's mine. So Mashiach is somebody who we might think is going to be coming in on a white horse and being like a savior, but he comes in as an ani v'reichav al achamar. He's a person also that you wouldn't believe that he could be it. That Evan Masu Abaynim Haisler Reshpina, that the stone that everybody's going to say, that's Mashiach? You know, I thought Mashiach was going to be him or him. No. It's the least likely to succeed. That's always who Mashiach is going to become. Mashiach is going to be the person that you least expect to be Mashiach. Because those are the people that you have to watch out for. Yizara mibnei aniyim shemehem teitzitar. Greatness comes from the most unexpected places. The most unexpected places. I found an amazing Yalka Ruveni. The Yalka Ruveni says, and we started with a question on the pasuk when it says that Eila b'nei Dan l'mishpachaisim, and then it says chushim. What does it mean Eila b'nei Dan? I should say this is the ben Dan. Now Eila b'nei Dan, was chushim. So listen to what he says. Unbelievable. He says it says b'nei mishem chashivusai because he was very chashuv. Shehu yachid shakol kirabim. He was an individual that was shakol kirabim. It's sort of like the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says, like, you include the pasuk of Zechira of Sarah Imenu, right? Because from Sarah comes Klal Yisrael. Sometimes you have an individual that, even though she's a yachid, but you can consider her to be a rabbin. Don Chushim ben Don was considered to be a rabbin. That's what we consider. That's what we call him b'nei Don Chushim. Why? Sheyatza mimenu Mashiach ben David. Out of Chushim comes Mashiach ben David. I didn't twist this around. I didn't think of this and then You know, I found this Yalka Reuveni afterwards. I was just thinking that Mashiach is Azah Demus of Chushim Ben Dan. And now I see that Chushim Ben Dan, Mashiach stems from Chushim Ben Dan. Chushim became, Melech HaMashiach comes from Chushim. And in fact, he said his mother was from Dan. Mashiach's mother was from Dan, who knew? And then it says, Chushim Chaser Vav. The word Chushim is Chaser Vav. Ches Shin Yod Mem Mashiach. The word Chushim itself is Mashiach, and the Shlach HaKadosh says the same word. The Shlach HaKadosh says that, quoting the Arizal, that Chushim Chaser Ksev Shu Oisei is Mashiach. It's such a tremendous yesaid. This is what we're here for. Our job in life is to discover, is to bring out the fullest potential of every single person. You find those hidden gems in life. You find those people that you know there's greatness, but for some reason they're not able to realize it. They're not able to express their greatness. We know people like that. We know that there's something more to them. But for some reason, they're just hidden, and they're not, and they need a little chizuk. You know, I just was thinking now, you know, one of the great people, and you know, that I was fortunate to know, is Rav Meir Zlatowitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was responsible, as you know, for Art Scroll, the entire Art Scroll revolution. And you know, you can't go into any base medrash without having a shas faculty in your Yerushalmi, and the blue shas and the red shas, and the, you know, and every Art Scroll book that was ever published is this one man's. You know, so you think he's probably a big Talmud Chacham, and he probably was very popular, very, you know, and he was very popular. When I knew him, he was the king of the world. He had Schottensteins, he had every Gevir is throwing money at him, running after him to sponsor Svarim, and, you know, tremendous. But if you read his biography, there was a biography written about him a few years ago, and it's must read if you have, after camp is over, you have a little time, and it's not him. You know, it's very kedai. It's called Rabbi Meir Zlatowitz, and he was overweight when he was a child. He had a terrible, terrible stutter. He wasn't good at sports. He was literally one of these kids that, you know, you look at and you say, Nabuch, like, you know, what's going to be with him? What's going to happen to him? And later in life, he was divorced from his wife, whatever that was written about in the book. I'm not trying to be Megala any side this. Everything was written beautifully about in the book. And he was struggling. He was a single dad. He was raising his three children, came out, I think, by himself. And he wanted to speak to his Rebbe, Rav Moshe Feinstein. And he went to visit Rav Moshe. He had to cry to him about how difficult his plight was. And Rav Moshe had a very important didn't tire going on, he couldn't come, and then the next day was a very big snowstorm, and he was stuck in the house the whole day, you know, watching the kids, being a babysitter, and he had to do his work, and the business was falling apart, his family life was falling apart, everything was falling apart. And there was a knock on the door at night, and again, there was a snowstorm, nobody was walking around the streets of New York, and he opened the door, and there was standing Rav Moshe Feinstein. He had walked how many miles, I don't know, to get to his house. And he came in, and he put each of the kids to bed. He lifted them up. He got them into pajamas or something. He put them into bed. He said Kriya Shema Lamita with them. And then he sat down with Rav Meir Zlatowitz in the living room and said, now talk to me. And Rav Meir was like just pouring out his heart to him. And the story could have ended there, and we never would have heard about him. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him tremendous, tremendous kaifas ha-nefesh. And he was able to build this yeshiva without walls that has influenced and inspired millions of people around, I think it single-handedly probably revitalized Daf Yomi, you know, in America. I remember when I was growing up as a kid, I don't remember any Daf Yomi shiurim. I don't remember. I just don't. Maybe they exist in the five towns or whatever. I grew up in Long Beach. I don't remember. I don't think there was a Daf Yomi. I'm almost positive that there was never a Daf Yomi. In Gemara, like if there was like one day a week that the rabbi gave a Talmud class, that was a chiddush. Remember, there was two balabatim that used to learn, I think, Mishnayis together after davening, and that was like, wow, and they're big talmid chacham. Like I had no, and then like, but with Art Scroll, suddenly like it opened up the world of Torah to so many people. My point is that that sometimes you have these people that you don't understand how much potential lies within, but if you just like, you know, immediately look at them and size them up and already categorize them, put them in a box and say, okay, they are not, you know, successful, and these are the people I want to hitch my wagon to, and not those people, then more often than not, you'll be wrong. Because more often than not, there's so much good that's found in so many people, and specifically the people that are suffering and that have so many sorrows and challenges, if you're able to unlock them and you're able to help them a little bit and put your arm around them and take a walk with them and just mobilize them and allow them to do their tafkid in life, then just watch out and you'll see tremendous, tremendous yeshuas coming from them. I want to just end with a story. The holy Baal Shem Tov, founder of Chassidus, was once approached by a chassid. And this chassid goes over to him and says, Rebbe, he says, I always hear about Eliyahu Navi, and he never died, he's around. He said, I want to see Eliyahu Navi. I want to finally get to meet Eliyahu Navi. Please tell me where I can find, how I can have this encounter with Eliyahu Navi. He exists, you know, people have Gilui Eliyahu all the time. You hear stories about people meeting Eliyahu and other recent Gedalim that, you know, I want to see Eliyahu Navi. Baal Shem Tov says, fine, I'll show you Eliyahu Navi. He says, this Shabbos, I want you to go to a certain house, and he gave exact directions. You have to walk through the forest, and it was in the middle of the winter, it was freezing cold. And you're going to make a left at that tree and a right at that tree. And then you're going to, you know, miles and miles in the frigid, you know, Russian winter, you'll get to a house. And you'll stay there for Shabbos. You'll ask them if you could stay for Shabbos. And in that house, you're going to find Eliyahu HaNavi. Chassid was so excited. It's finally my dream come true. I get to meet Eliyahu HaNavi. So he gets his suitcase ready and he goes on his horse and buggy, and he goes into the forest, deep into the forest. Finally, he came to this house that the Baal Shem Tov said existed, and sure enough, he saw that there was some steam coming out of the chimney. He said, this must be it. He knocks on the door, and it's like maybe an hour before Shabbos, an early Shabbos in the winter, and he opens up, and he never saw a scene like what was going on in this house. He thought he was going to come in, he's going to see Eliyahu HaNavi sitting on a kiseh shel Eliyahu or something, and Berumah shel Olam. There was a woman answer the door, and she was wearing shmatis, torn clothing, and there were kids in the background that were running around with bare feet, and also like they looked like they haven't taken a shower in a long time, and there was, you know, grime all over the house, and there was such poverty, such abject poverty, and the father was sitting depressed at a table in the background. And he said, you know what, I don't know if I have time to get home for Shabbos. He's thinking to himself, but I really don't want to stay here for Shabbos. But by then it was too late. And he said, would it be okay if I stay here for Shabbos? So the wife said, listen, if you want to stay here, gesunte, you're more than welcome. But I'll just say, we don't have enough food to eat ourselves. So if you brought food for yourself, then you could stay for Shabbos. If you don't, then I don't know, you know, you might have to fast or something. We don't have enough food. He says, is there any makolet in the neighborhood? Is there a place that I could go and buy? So he said, well, I don't know, it's a little close to Shabbos. Maybe he's still open. Go, you know, down a couple of trees and to the left. He goes into his horse. He goes riding. Sure enough, the guy was just about to lock up his store. And he says, what do you have left? He says, I have a little cholent. I have a little clothes. He says, whatever you have, just pack it up. I need it. And he brought candies for the kids or whatever it was back in those days, and fruits and whatever. He mamash brought up the store and he brought it in. The kids could not believe their eyes. They never saw this much food in their entire life. And they set a beautiful Shabbos table using whatever they had, and suddenly there was light back in the eyes of the children, and the husband, you know, got an oomph to him again, and he started getting ready for Shabbos, and the wife put on her finest Shabbos robe and tichel, and they were like, they couldn't believe it. Like, this is finally, they had a normal Shabbos. They never had this in their life. And they had a beautiful Friday night, and they sang Zemiros, and they said Torah, and then Shabbos morning again, Shalosh Shudis, and then he left, and he said, so nice to spend the Shabbos with you. And they said, thank you so much for coming. And they were happy. Imamish was Mechayim Mesim, and it was amazing. But he went back the next day, and he went to the Rebbe, he went to the Baal Shem, and he said, Rebbe, I went there for Shabbos, but I didn't see Eliyahu HaNavi. And he said, well, describe to me with the scene what happened, and he told him exactly what happened. He says, Eliyahu HaNavi wasn't there. I don't know what you were telling me, but he wasn't there. So the Baal Shem said, go back again this coming Shabbos. Then you'll see Eliyahu HaNavi. He says, Rebbe, I can't go back. I mean, first of all, my wife missed me this Shabbos. My kids missed me. It didn't work. It wasn't there. He says, I'm telling you, I want you. You asked me to see Eliyahu HaNavi. I want you to go back this coming Shabbos a second time, and then you're going to find Eliyahu HaNavi. Guaranteed. So this time, he already went prepared. He went to Gourmet Glot of those days, and he packed up all of the sushi and everything, the chalapshas, everything. He packed up gushers and Bakal Mikol Kol, and he brought them to this home again. Again, it was like an hour before Shabbos, and he was already armed with all of the matamim for Shabbos, and he knew that he was going to be misamech them. And before he was about to enter the house, the door was open a little bit. The door was ajar. And before he went in, he stopped and he listened in to what was being said, what was being spoken between the family. And what was happening was that the kids were crying to their mother. The kids were crying to their mother, and they were saying that the kids were crying. I don't want to ruin the highlight. They're saying, Mama, we want a Shabbos like last Shabbos. We don't want to go back to the poverty. We don't want to have nothing to eat again. We want to have a joyous Shabbos like we had last Shabbos. So she looks at the kids and she says to them, do you think that Eliyahu HaNavi comes every single time? You think every Shabbos Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come? You have to be zeicha. You should daven a little bit. Maybe Eliyahu HaNavi will come again. And then this person chapped what the Baal Shem meant. Sometimes we're looking all over for Eliyahu HaNavi. We're waiting for Eliyahu HaNavi. Where is Eliyahu HaNavi? And Eliyahu HaNavi is really you and I. We're Eliyahu HaNavi. It's our job in life to be the savior, to be the salvation, to be that person that comes to be Mashiach others, to include others, and to find Mashiach. To be able to find Mashiach, because isn't Eliyahu HaNavi's job at the end of the day to be a vaser, to be the one that tells us that Mashiach is about to come? Eliyahu HaNavi is the one that shows us the way to finding Mashiach. And that's our job in life. Our job is to find, to identify, to detect the chushim ben duns among us, to find those individuals, and we know of them, we probably have a whole list of them in our brains if we stop and think. People that need us. They need us. What do they need us for? They need a friend. Popular people don't always need so many friends. They have enough friends. It's the people that really are sad and lonely. And when we come and we are able to give them a nice word, a compliment, I like your suit, I like your shirt, wow, that was a great play that you just made in the game. And you're able to lift them up, Mechayim Mesim U'mamare, sometimes it just takes a word to be Mechayim Mesim. Eliyahu HaNavi is you and I, and we could bring Mashiach, we could find the Chushim Ben Dons, and from the Chushim Ben Dons is where Mashiach will come from. And it will be because of us. We could bring Mashiach. But it's a matter of changing our perspective. The things that we always thought were true, that these are the people that I should be close with, these are the people that I should hang out with, these are the people that I should embrace, and the other people, you know, let other people worry about them. But that's not my chevra. That's such a folly. It's such a fallacy. The greatest gift that we have in life is the Cam Cayley legacy, and that is the ability to include even the most unfortunate amongst us, to play with them and to sing with them and to dance with them and to make them feel like they're the kings of the universe, because you know what? someday they probably will be.
Thank you very, very much. That's how it's going.